IQPod on the Bayou, episode 8. My, what a scratchy voice I have today. Hello, this is IQPod on the Bayou. If you're new to the show, welcome. Today I am doing a kind of a no-frills show. I have an interview for you with Jewel Nelms, who is the mother of Frances Newton, who is on death row. She is scheduled to be killed on September 14th by the state of Texas. I believe that she didn't receive a fair trial, and there are a lot of other people who feel the same way. And that pretty much explains it. I did a little mini 10-minute podcast a couple days ago after going to the first meeting, my first meeting of the committee to free Frances Newton. And so I met Frances's mom there that night and went to her apartment last night and interviewed her. We talked for about 2.5 hours. I recorded about half an hour of it. There was a lot that we talked about that I didn't record, and I'm sorry about that. I think we were both much more comfortable when the microphone was off. She showed me pictures of Frances when she was a little girl, and of her family, her husband and her two kids that were killed. So it was really interesting. It's I think one of the reasons why I want to do this is that it's for me, I have always been opposed to the death penalty in a sort of theoretical sense, but now that I've been able to connect it to a real person, I feel a lot more strongly about that, and I'm hoping that other people will feel the same way. So I'd like to point out Roe Wilson, who we mentioned in this interview. I don't know that we explained very well who that is. She's the assistant district attorney of Harris County, and she let slip in a video a couple months ago that there was a second gun, and people had asked about that, and that had been speculated about for a long time, and because of her slip of the tongue that she made about 5 times, it was revealed that this had been hidden, this piece of evidence. So that's what that's about. I'd like to just go ahead and go on with the interview. So here's my interview from, I guess that was September 1st, last night, with Jewel Nelms. Okay, so I'm here with Jewel Nelms.
Nelms.
Yes. And this is Frances's mom.
Yeah, I'm Frances' mother.
And so I wanted to get some information just about what Frances was like as a child and that sort of thing, just so people would kind of know what she's like.
I'm told that she's just like me, and I've been told that I am too easy, too soft. But she said she wanted to be like me, and I said, no, don't be like me, because sometimes when you're too soft, you get run over, and people take advantage of you. But she said, that's all right, I still want to be like you anyway. So
yeah.
She's a pretty easygoing person, she's smart, and she loved people, and crazy about children. That's why I know there's no way she could have killed the children. It's like, before she had children, she always liked to be around other people's children. She was always trying to take care of somebody's baby or somebody's kids, you know.
Yeah.
Before she was old enough to drive, she was always trying to drive. Children in the neighborhood, she'd have them on the back of the truck trying to take them to skate night.
Wow. We just watched the video, and it's really remarkable to me, and I wonder if she's been like this all of her life, just that she's so accepting of everything that's going on.
She's always been soft like that. And like I say, again, my mother was that way. And sort of rubbed off on me, and mine sort of rubbed off on her. She's just loving and easygoing. Just love everybody.
And she has a lot of faith, it seems, that thinks she's just going to be taken care of. And
well, God is taking care of her.
Yeah.
And I do believe that he will continue to do that. You know, the Bible tells us that there's angels camped around about us.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. I believe that because she's had so much support even in the prison system, with the prison ministries and people that are coming and going in the prison system, even some of the guards. And I can even say the warden, if I will. She seemed to be just a loving person and seems to care about her too.
So, wow. So that was one of my questions. I wanted to ask how her treatment has been she's been in prison.
She didn't have any complaints about the treatment. She's really been treated well. And I don't believe people are supposed to judge you even after you're there, because there's no way to know. It's all of the innocent people that's been coming off of death row and coming out of jail, there's no way to know whether anybody's guilty or not. You just have to trust them and try to work things out with them. If there's too much doubt, then I think they should go back to court.
Which, in this case...
Because once you take somebody's life, you can't give it back. So to me, when there's so many questions unanswered, it seems like they should want to go back to court. Even if I was on the other side, if I was the DA's office, I wouldn't want to convict somebody when there's so many unanswered questions. And in this case, the DA herself is known about a gun that has not been mentioned anywhere in the trial transcript.
Until she let it slip videotape.
I'm sure she did not intend to do that. But I'm every time I mention it, I have to thank her for it, because she's the very person that wants to see her executed. Mm-hmm. Now she's probably the person that's going to help get her off of that road. And hopefully back into court.
I love the fact that you said you wanted to see her face to face and thank her for...
I do. And I will if I get a chance to see her. And I'm going to make it my business to try to go and visit and see if I can talk to her. I do want to thank her.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what I wanted to say to her when she's saying all those ugly things. Mm-hmm. But now that I know she knew all the time that there was another gun hidden, I'd just like to see her face to face.
Yeah. Would you want to get an explanation from her?
Yes. I want to know why. I want to know if money or whatever. I would like to know what motivates you to take a gun from a crime scene, even if she didn't do it, to know that there's been a gun taken from a crime scene that nobody ever talked about during the trial, you know, that nobody ever talked about, period, until she just finally mentioned it. Mm-hmm. My daughter and I, my husband, my other daughter, we've been talking about this for years. So, thank you, Rob.
Yeah. I guess, the trial period, when she was going on trial, how was that process for
you? It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Our system, which should be a justice system, I've taken the word justice out of it for right now. Because I don't see any justice where someone is in a position like Roe Wilson is, that's hiding truth. And now people can understand why my daughter is asking for truth. We knew all the time that somebody inside the circle, the police or the DA's office, these people already knew there was a second gun that they never bothered to bring up in the trial. As a matter of fact, in the trial, they said it was just one gun. Charlie Anderson said he only tested one gun. Mm-hmm. So that tells me the gun she had wasn't tested, or the gun my daughter had wasn't tested. Who's to know? If the policeman picked up the gun the night of the murder from the crime scene, we never heard anything about that. We know they got a gun from the burnt house where she put it, because she told them it was there. So they had two guns in their possession the same night. Who's to know which one they tested? We don't know, do we?
No. And what they're hiding is...
Why are they hiding it?
Yeah, yeah. So her attorney, the court-appointed attorney that...
Ron Mark.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name.
I don't know if I'd call him an attorney. I think she would have been better off trying to defend herself. Mm-hmm. Or maybe with me defending her.
Yeah.
Because to me, he was just in the way. It was just to say she had an attorney. He was so busy trying to get her to plead guilty. He wasn't busy at all trying to get ready for the trial.
Right.
So after so many times of him going down there, then why don't you plead guilty and they won't give you the death penalty? So finally she told him, well, if that's all you come down here for, you can just stop coming. Because I'm not going to plead guilty to something I didn't do. Just like you can't give a life back if somebody takes it. Once you plead guilty, you can't take that back. Mm-hmm. So it's real dumb to plead guilty to something you didn't do. The thought of dying should not scare somebody into pleading guilty if they're not guilty.
Yeah.
We're not going to die before our time. Whenever we go, it's our time.
Right. So did you meet Ron Mock before
I met him.
What did you think of him when you first met him?
You know, it's really hard to say. I've never talked with him when he didn't have alcohol in his breath.
Wow.
Never, ever. And every month, for 18 months, they reset the trial every month, once a month, and I was there. When they were picking the jury, I was there every day. I never got close to him. I never was in his presence without smelling alcohol in his breath. Hmm. And he didn't have to get too close for you to smell it. So...
It's not a good sign.
I used to wonder how he slept at night, but I know the alcohol numbs your mind and, you know, mm-hmm. it relaxes you.
Yeah.
So I imagine he probably, after a while, after so many lies and convicted so many people and not helping them, I mean, after a while, I imagine it was pretty hard for him to sleep at night. But I don't know. The Bible says when you don't use your conscience, when you don't pay attention to it like you should,
mm-hmm.
it's just like it's seared with a hot iron. In other words, just like it's not there anymore. It doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So it's like you don't have it. So when you ignore it and you just keep on doing wrong, wrong doesn't seem like wrong to you.
And all the drinking, like, gets
yeah, that'll
rid
numb
that
it
conscience too.
That will numb it too. That's right. So once it's numbed, you can just take it out. It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
If you could, you know.
How often have you been able to visit Francis? It's, earlier you mentioned that it seems, what'd you say? You could probably drive over there with your eyes closed.
I've been so much. Over the years when I was working, I would go once a month. I started trying to go twice a month. She said, Mom, once a month is enough. You're working too hard. You need mm-hmm. to rest some. So I used to go once a month. But since I've been retired, I try to go a couple of times a month. And I like to just surprise them and pop up. But sometimes mm-hmm. I'm busy writing and telling them I'm coming, I'm on the way, you know. But she's a joy to be around. And she mm-hmm. always has been. She's such a joy. She used to be the one to get everybody together for parties and little things, little get-togethers. And she would buy games and plan what we were going to do so everybody would have something to do. She was always such a... She likes sports.
Mm-hmm.
So she was always getting a volleyball net or some basketball or something for the kids to do. And then the adults would wind up doing it too.
Right.
We would have our own... my husband had 6 children and I had 4. We had one together. We had our own little baseball team or basketball, whatever we wanted to do, we could all do it together without any neighbors. Of course, we had neighbors over all the time, too. Whenever you had lots of children at your house, you don't have to count. You look around, and if you have 10, 11 at your house, you might look around and maybe 15, 16. Sometimes at the table, there was like 2 kids in each chair because sometimes other people's children would be there.
Wow.
But I would cook in big pots and not always have enough. It always worked out.
And so Frances was good at sort of
getting
that started.
Together. She was good at getting people together, and she always was. So I think she's looking forward to doing that again.
Yeah.
We can't wait. We can't wait until she gets out of there.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Yeah, I bet.
We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a big party. We're going to have a big party someplace.
I want to know about it.
Okay.
Wow. So, I wanted you to talk about, we were just talking about, too, that... The November 30th, right before her original
before
date.
December 1st. Oh, we were having a time. We sat and did silly stuff, and we found ourselves laughing, just like we were visiting at a picnic or something, and some of the guards kind of looked at us kind of sad and dropped their head down, and a couple of them were laughing.
Yeah.
Even the warden came in. The warden came in. She used to be at Gatesville, the warden there, and she's kind of smiling, you know, because she's known her for a long time, and she sort of knows us a little bit, you know. She's really a sweetheart. She has a job to do, I know that,
mm-hmm.
but she's really a sweetheart.
Yeah.
And she was just standing there smiling. I asked her something, she laughed, something about her hair or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked Frances, Frances loved peach cobbler. She used to ask me to make them all the time when she was out.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, Mom, when is the last time you made some peach cobbler? I said, I haven't made it since you've been gone. She said, you're kidding. And the girls laughed and said, no, she don't make us any peach cobbler. She said, well, she used to make it all the time. I said, well, you used to ask for it. She said, well, that's why you made it, because I asked for it. I said, yes.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, I want to know if you asked for some peach cobbler when they asked you what you wanted, you know, for your last meal. I said, you should have told them you wanted peach cobbler. She said, no, it probably won't taste like yours, and I'll be disappointed. I said, well, what did you ask for? I said, I didn't ask for nothing. That's not going to be my last meal. I said, you go, girl.
Yeah. So how close was it to the execution?
The next day.
Yeah, the next day when
the
stay. Okay. So when they told her that she had a stay of execution,
the execution was set for December 1st at 6 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, the governor called and told her she had a stay. But you see, she said she thought they were going to wait right up to 6 o'clock. I mean, you know, I knew I'm like her.
Mm-hmm.
I had so much peace and confidence that it wasn't time for her to go until I was saying it. I said, I'm going to Huntsville because my daughter's up there, but I'm not going to pick up no remains.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going up there because my daughter's up there, and she'll be coming back. She'll either be coming back to Houston or going back to Gatesville. And that's the way I felt. That's what I seriously felt. I do believe it takes faith to move God, and if that's what it takes to move Him, I got it.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what that would have been like, because I don't think I'm the type. Maybe I am. I've never been in that situation, but yeah. I don't feel like I'm the type of person that could just. That would have been going.
Well, you know, over the years, and from the start, with us knowing what's going on with the system, mm-hmm. we had to give it to God. Nobody else could deal with it.
That's the truth.
Nobody else could deal with it on a level with these people. These are people in high places. And the Bible says there's wickedness in people in high places, mm-hmm. spiritual wickedness. And the Bible is true, and God's word is true. But when He say, and you put your trust in Him, and trust Him, and wait on Him, and believe in Him, and He'll do what He say to do. And there's a verse that said that He'll reveal the hidden things. And that's what He's doing.
That's what happened with Roe Wilson is
our assistant DA, and that's what's happening with her. She is the only one that I've heard say that she's going to die. She talked about it December 1st, and she said she didn't die December 1st, but she's going to die this time. But the words that came out of her mouth are probably the words that's going to help us get back in court. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Ro. I can't thank her enough, but I got to thank God for putting the words there.
Yeah.
She couldn't help herself. It was time. It's like mm-hmm. she's been carrying around. It's kind of like a pregnancy. You carry it around so long, and it's time. Mm-hmm. When it's time, it's got to come out. She carried it for a long time. Evidently, she's been knowing this for 18 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was time, wasn't it? Past time.
How long ago did she say that? I can't remember.
A couple of months ago.
Okay.
In an interview with the British Broadcasting.
And now she's trying to take it back.
She tried to take it back and say she didn't mean to say guns. She intended to say bullets. But it wasn't a slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
She didn't say gun one time. She said it about 3 or 4 times, maybe uh-huh. 5 times. But it's not a slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
It was a silly thing for her to try to take it back, and she apologized to the courts. Why is she apologizing to the courts? Did the courts know she's been lying? It's scary.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they single my daughter out to do this. I think they've been doing this all the time. I think it's a daily thing, evidently. Mm-hmm. It's scary to think how many people they've convicted on false evidence and hid things. But you know, a lot of that's coming out in their crime lab now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some people dead already. They already found out that there was things they couldn't clear. That's sad.
It's very sad.
I tell you, they're going to have to answer to God one day, whether they know it or not. Mm-hmm. The Bible says they're going to have to answer.
So, what do you have any guess why they would do that? I mean, what?
I want to know. I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask as soon as the time permits itself, really, really soon. I'm going to go to the DA's office. I'm going to ask Ron Wilson why. Mm-hmm. I don't want to ask Ron Mock why. I've already been to Sergeant Freeze. He said, "Oh, I can't talk to you about the case. It might come back to court." I said, "Well, if it comes back to court, I hope you tell the truth." Mm-hmm. Because on April 10th, 1987, 3 days after the murder, he told us they'd recovered another gun, and they knew that her gun was not the murder weapon. The gun she had wasn't the murder weapon. So you say, since 87, we've known that something's going on in this system that shouldn't be going on, that they're hiding things. And that's a sad situation. I think they need to do a clean sweep through there. And maybe we need to get a law to where if people are found in the position Roe Wilson is found in, they lose their pension. That'll make them get up and take notice. Mm-hmm. That'll make them do the right thing. But we've got to do something. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do something. I don't know what yet. But I have some people that's going to talk with me, and we're going to sit down and we're going to try to figure out how we can fix it so they don't do this to somebody else. Because, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. like I said, I don't think they single out my daughter. I think they've done it to a lot of people. All these problems we have with our crime lab, I don't think it's a crime lab. I think the people have just been lying. I don't think they've been testing these things like they should. Mm-hmm. I think they should just lay back. I think Charlie Anderson has made statements that he just didn't test the things. And I think that's why it looks like there's something wrong with the crime lab. People are told to say a certain thing. Mm-hmm. I know that sometimes doing courses of working situations like this, sometimes people say whatever somebody tell them to say to keep the job. But if somebody's life depended on it, I'd have to get me another job. I couldn't do it because I couldn't sleep at night.
Yeah.
But you know, just now one or two persons not involved in this. Roe Wilson didn't do this by herself. She said the officers recovered the gun, so they're involved.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a lot of people involved in this. And like I say, I don't think they singled out my daughter. I think they have singled out people that they know didn't have money to get attorneys. Because the testing of the gun has not been done right. It's never been done right. At the beginning, in the paperwork before the trial, which we didn't see until after December 1st, they said the shell casing didn't match the gun. That means that's not the gun.
Didn't.
If the shell casings they found at the scene don't match the gun, if they say the murder weapon, that means that's not the murder weapon. The shell casings to a gun is like fingerprints. Mm-hmm. Like fingerprints to people, that's what a shell casing is to a gun. Now, I've heard a ballistic man testify to that. And I think any ballistic man will testify to that.
Mm.
I'm learning so much about our system, our laws, our forensics, and it scares me. It scares me that we have people in positions where they can just decide, let's do this person, and do it.
And there's nothing they can do?
Yeah. Well, if we don't have God in the situation, they're going to be killing people.
Mm-hmm.
But God is not, he doesn't forget his people. And he looks out. He takes care of his own. Francis belonged to him.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to him. He's going to work this. He's going to work it out.
Yeah. Well, after being at the committee meeting last night, there are just so many people that are so passionate about the case.
They're looking at the facts.
Mm-hmm.
First, people thought that I was that way because she's my daughter. But if you just look at the facts, all the things that's been happening and the things that are happening, and you'll see she needs a new trial. And that's all we're asking for. We don't want them to give us anything. Just give her a new trial so the truth can come out. So the whole truth can come
right.
out. Because the first trial, the whole truth didn't come out.
Yeah, and Ron Mock did very little.
Very little.
I heard that letter that her in-laws wrote to, who did he write that? Ron Mock had never asked them about appearing in court, and they were willing to testify on her behalf.
I can't say much about that.
Okay.
But I don't know if anybody would go to anybody and say I'll testify. They may get a chance to testify.
Mm-hmm.
When everything is looked at, maybe we'll get a new trial. Maybe they'll get a chance to testify.
How did the committee form?
I think it started with Gloria Aruba, with the Death Penalty Abolition Group.
Mm-hmm.
It started with her and maybe Hataji and Jerry and some of the people at KPFT.
Okay.
Bruce went to Shape Community Center. I think Bruce is a friend of the family, and he was trying to go to different people to mm-hmm. find out where to go to start getting us some help. And somebody sent him to Shape Community Center. That's where the Lloyd Parker is. That's where we had the meeting.
Okay.
And that's where he met Gloria Rubuck with the Death Penalty Abolition, and Jerry, and some of the people that works at KPFT, and they have these programs called Fight Back, and they started talking about it, and then Masood put
yeah.
it on, and Art, they put it on the internet, they started a website, and everybody's just been so beautiful, and everybody just fell in line and started getting together. So
mm-hmm.
we have people of all colors and race and creeds and religions, and it's just been great. There's so much support. There's so many people out there. We have people in New York and Philadelphia and even Amnesty International in Germany and different places. It's all over the internet everywhere I can
mm-hmm.
think of. It's on the internet. They're downloading the cards for the governor and sending emails and faxes, and they're mailing those postcards, and everybody's just been wonderful. But I like mostly the fact that they put everything on the internet and they're updating it and putting the new information on there all the time. So we get more supporters. People can see that this is a girl that's really innocent and she needs
mm-hmm.
a new trial. And I think maybe the governor will take notice and say, okay, we have something going on here. People are looking at this and people are looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would want to be a person that would do something because it's the right thing to do. Not just do it because I have the power, but look at the facts and do it because it's the right thing to do, because there's too many unanswered questions.
Right. Right. So, as far as what people can do is, it to me, it seems like I'm trying to encourage everyone I know just to, like, send those emails and just speak up about it. Is there?
I think that's more powerful than anything else for people to, because people say, okay, we don't want to sit still and see this happen. Because it could happen to anybody else, too. I never thought this could happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
When my daughter was first arrested, when she found her family, I knew she had. I knew right away she hadn't killed him. The first thing I asked when he said that he had that he was going to take my daughter down, and I asked him after he took her downtown, did she have any drugs? He said, no. Are you tested for drugs? He said, yes. Had any alcohol in her? He said, no. That's why she didn't do it. Because I know sober, she wouldn't have done anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in an environment with somebody that's doing drugs and alcohol, and it's your spouse or your sister or brother, you never know. And then I also know that people put things in your drink because it happened to me once a mm-hmm. long time ago, and we didn't even hear about things like that.
Right.
And it taught me something. And it was a cult. I wasn't drinking alcohol. But it taught me to never leave my drink unattended with anybody. It taught me a lesson. And I know people will do that because it's been done to me. So that's the first thing I thought of, because people do things like that. But after he said, no alcohol, no drugs, no nothing in her system, I said, she didn't do it. That was all I needed to know. If she's sober, I know sober, she would never hurt anybody, not to mention her family.
Mm-hmm. Was that the sergeant or one of the officers that
this
you first
was sergeant
heard from?
Freeze, and he was downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever she was taken downtown, he's the one that would talk to her. But the two officers on the scene, I never saw them. I just knew their names.
So you never spoke to them?
But when Roy Wilson mentioned that they recovered a gun from the scene, I do want to talk to them now, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make that my business, too. I'm going to try to see them and try to see Roy Wilson. I do want to know why. People ask me why. Well, why would they do that? It's like some people that really don't know the facts thinking, well, you're just talking. Well, people wouldn't do things like that. The assistant DA wouldn't do that. They wouldn't see this video. They'd never believe for a million years she had that. She kept the knowledge about the gun here.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't recover it because she didn't go to the scene. But she know who did.
Yeah.
So that means she's known since 87.
She probably told him to do it.
She's been carrying this around all these years. So it was time for her to give it up. Now that she's given it up, she's giving them up.
Mm-hmm.
So they might as well come on and admit it too.
Yeah.
They might as well. It's out there now. So I want to know why.
But she's still going to try to cover it up and
she
say
tried.
She didn't say it.
She tried to, but now that they see she's on video, maybe they'll quit trying to defend her.
Yeah.
It's not like she said it and you can say, well, she didn't intend to say it. They can say that if it's not on video, but now with it being on video, they can't deny what she said.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you want to mention that I haven't?
Well, no, I think it's in Judge Hoy's hand. I think it's in the federal court.
Right.
The
so
federal judge now, and I'm pleased with that. I think he'll do the right thing. I'm sure he also has a CD.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't make him take notice, well, heaven help us.
Yeah.
And then God himself got to come down here and help us. If our system, if people don't do the right thing now that she's admitted about the second gun,
mm-hmm.
then we need some serious help. And God might come down here and do us like he did New Orleans.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that would be something. You know, her appeal went to New Orleans last year before the date.
Oh, really?
And they turned it down. They didn't look at it. Now they're not even in a position to look at it.
They're not looking at anything right now.
It doesn't have to go down there now. It's go right here in Houston, federal
mm-hmm.
judge.
Wow.
So I'm sad for those people down there. It's a sad situation.
It really is.
But he said, my goodness, it went down there and they didn't even bother to look at it.
They just zip it right on by?
Yeah.
That's.
Mm-hmm. In other words, they put a stamp on it and say, go ahead and execute it. That's what they might as well say.
That's the thing that's
but
so hard for
they
me.
They didn't
just
put
to,
any new, but I think it's because they didn't put any new stuff on it.
Yeah.
They didn't put any new stuff, and they didn't try to. You know,
okay.
So maybe that's the reason. Maybe I shouldn't be so harsh, but.
Well, it's hard to just
to know what to do,
and that people are so like they think, are just so disposable that you're just like,
Yeah.
Put a stamp on it.
Yeah.
Let him go.
Yeah. So I'm hoping everybody stand up and say, okay, we're not going to take this anymore. Because it can happen to any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it might have happened to some. It's happened to other people's families. You know how many people have come through our system?
Yeah.
How many people have they just pushed through and said, okay, let's do this one, and let's do this one, and let's do this one.
Yeah.
They close cases like that. I would still like to know why they would just do this to somebody and let them just go ahead and die, knowing it, and they knowing the truth on it.
Yeah.
Now, she knew this December 1st, and she was pushing to execute.
Probably get it off of her desk, and so she wouldn't have to feel like she had to hide it anymore.
It wasn't gonna come unglued from her own inside.
Yeah.
Like it's done now.
Mm-hmm.
See, she couldn't keep it any longer. She was gonna tell it anyway, sooner or later, even if they had executed her.
Yeah.
Sad situation. She'll probably be admitting a few other things. But it's sad. I think they're killing people without cause, knowing the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can you believe with a situation like this?
Yeah.
I can't say too much. I'm in awe, you know, with this stuff about the DA's office.
Yeah.
I am.
It's scary.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for doing the interview today.
Well, thank you. And I hope this will help somebody. I hope it will help somebody downtown.
Yeah.
And like I say, I hope we find some kind of law that will make people responsible, make them accountable
mm-hmm.
for what they do wrong. And I think a lot of people, hitting them in the pocketbook will make them stand up and take notice, make them do the right thing. So I think I'm seriously going to try to work on something that's going
mm-hmm.
to do that. Because there's got to be a way to make people in charge accountable for their actions.
Mm-hmm.
Because they think they're above the law. They're supposed to be enforcing the law and doing the right thing. But if you're not doing the right thing, somebody needs to hold you accountable.
Yeah, and there needs to be some way to check this stuff out so it's not
That's
so
right.
easy.
That's right, some way to make them accountable so they won't be so quick to do to an innocent person what they've done to my daughter.
Yeah.
Or what they're trying to do to my daughter. I mean, when I say what they've done, I mean, she's been incarcerated since 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had things that got hidden all that time.
And all the while, just
I know it sounds like a broken record, but that just knocks me off my feet.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for the interview.
Wow, I still haven't learned how to gracefully end an interview, have I? That made me laugh yesterday. I'm not laughing right now, I promise. So if you would like to, I guess here are the things that you can do. If you're a podcaster, pass this on. You can use any part of this show that you like, or the show I posted yesterday with the audio of the letter being read from Francis's in-laws. And also go to www.freefrancis.org. From there you can send emails and you can find out about other events that are going on in Houston. There's a video there from Democracy Now! As well. And I want to apologize for the audio quality. I'm an amateur. I'd like to have some money to buy some new stuff, and I might be able to soon, but that's what I got for right now. I would like to direct you also to Yeast Radio, just Yeast radio.com. Madge Weinstein has done an excellent job of researching and discovering the best places to direct your funds if you're so inclined, as far as victims of Hurricane Katrina. My email address is mikeypod@gmail.com, and you can find the website at www.mikeypodonthebayou.blogspot.com. And that's what I've got for you. I'd love to hear your comments about the show. And man, I'm just low—not low depressed, but just calm, and I feel like one of those jazz brunch DJs, something like that. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Just look at all those hungry mouths we have to feed. Take a look at all the suffering we breed. So many lonely faces scattered all around, searching for what they need. Is this the world we created? What did we do it for? Is this the world we invaded? Against the law, so it seems in the end. Is this what we're all living for today? The world that care inside a happy home. Somewhere a wealthy man is sitting on his throne, waiting for life to go by. Oh, is this the world we created? We made it all our own. Is this the world we devastated? Right to the bone, if there's a God.